May it please the court, I'm Gary Cohen, registration number 7612. This case, I want to focus on the writ of attachment against the property of a non-party, McKenna Development Inc. The judgment in this case is that McKenna Development Company, a Colorado limited liability company, is to give a quitclaim deed sufficient to transfer ownership of these lots. The evidence is undisputed that title to the lots is in another entity, a corporation, although administratively dissolved, McKenna Development Inc. The statute, the case law is clear that administrative dissolution does not terminate the existence. The corporation continues its existence, can collect assets. But for some reason, ESF decided not to sue MDI. Now, this is very similar to ESF's decision not to, or the decision of Mr. Irving not to file suit on behalf of IRA, which alleges $600,000 in damages. He testified for tactical reasons. We didn't bring that lawsuit. We're going to bring a separate lawsuit. So in this case, I don't know if it was tactical reasons, intentionally not pursuing MDI, or it was just negligent, failing to read the statute. But for whatever reason, MDI was not a party. It was never served with a summons and complaint, was never served with any process whatsoever in this case. On August 7, 2009, ESF filed a motion for contempt citation. The only relief requested were punitive sanctions, a fine and or imprisonment against McKenna Development Company, the limited liability company, and its principal, Mr. McKenna.
Well, let me stop here because this is a fundamental question I have. This was a punitive contempt action, not a remedial.
Correct. And in fact, on November 12th, before there was a visiting judge and the digital equipment didn't work, but there was a hearing, and the docket indicates, and it did occur, Mr. McKenna was read his rights because it was a punitive action. But on November 9th, 3 days before that hearing, a quitclaim deed transferring all of the limited liability company's right title and interest into the four lots was given to ESF's counsel.
So your position is that purged the contempt? Your position is that purged the contempt?
Yeah, assuming he actually acknowledged, but yes.
Which would render it basically a remedial contempt case, even though it may have been noticed up as a punitive contempt. It clearly wasn't a punitive contempt case.
Right.
It was a remedial contempt case. And your client attempted to remedy the contempt by giving that quitclaim deed, right?
Well, the problem was the order said a quitclaim deed sufficient to transfer ownership. The limited liability company didn't have ownership, did not have the ability to satisfy the order because the title is in the name of a separate and distinct entity. But what gets worse, so we have the hearing.
Who was the sole shareholder of MDI on that date in 2009?
Mr. McKenna.
Who were the officers of MDI on that date in 2009?
I think Mr. McKenna was president.
So why couldn't Mr. McKenna sign the deed on behalf of MDI and transfer it like the court ordered?
Well, MDI was not a party. MDI was not required to do it.
But McKenna was.
No. McKenna Development Company, a Colorado limited liability company, was not. There's no order that Mr. McKenna individually was required to do that. The order is directed to the defendant, McKenna Development Company, a Colorado limited liability company. So there's a hearing in December, and Mr. McKenna exercises his Fifth Amendment rights. The court doesn't allow him to do that, and then says why I was wrong, and still allows ESF to prepare on these questions that it would have asked, which is a clear violation of Fifth Amendment rights. But the critical part, so on November 9th, the deed is transferred. On November 12th, the same day of the hearing, ESF files a response.
Sir Cohen, let me interrupt you one more time. I'm sorry. You point out that the order of the court of May 27th is directed only to McKenna Development, which is true.
Yes.
So therefore you say McKenna himself shouldn't have felt he had any responsibility to transfer the lots. That's what you're saying, right?
He wasn't ordered to do that.
Right.
That's correct.
However, the civil theft verdict that the jury entered in this case does say that all three of them are responsible for civil theft, and orders, as the jury did here, that the four lots be returned to the ownership of ESF. Seems like a slip of the pen in the judge's order of May 27th. Is that all we have here?
Well, again, the jury verdict form, I don't think the court can order a non-owner to do something that, and that's not part of the order. It wasn't part of the order. It wasn't requested by ESF. It's not part of the order. But the critical part is then on November 12th, a reply to the November 9th response. Again, the only relief requested is final imprisonment. So they have a hearing on January 12th, 2010, ESF files its supplemental motion, goes through the facts. And again, the only relief requested is a final imprisonment. There's no relief requesting NBI to be brought into the case, NBI to do anything.
Were there findings made beyond a reasonable doubt at that level?
No. I mean, the court's order just says it was conclusory. There's no findings.
The written order you're talking about.
Excuse me?
The written order that you're talking about.
Yes. Well, the January, on January 20th, 2010, the court enters an order finding contempt. And it just has conclusory, no specific findings of anything, just conclusory holding. And enters what it purports to be an order under Rule 70, and it says, divest title from the defendant and orders it into ESF. Well, the defendant is this limited liability company. The defendant is not McKenna Development, Inc. McKenna Development, the limited liability company, did not have title. This McKenna did not have title. Title was in the name of McKenna Development, Inc. Rule 70 only allows a court to divest title from a party. The Bush versus Winkler case from the Colorado Supreme Court makes it very clear that a party has to have actual notice being served with process. It can't be just by innuendo. It has to be actual notice. Then what happens, and this is, I think, the crux of the case, and I think the court should come down strong on this. The writ of attachment is submitted by ESF counsel on March 2nd, saying we're divesting not only the limited liability company, which is a party, but also McKenna Development, Inc., of its title, even though it was never requested in any of the motions, it was never requested in the complaint, MDI was not a party, and the court the next day signs that order. I think that order is...
You're saying it was prepared by counsel, this order. That's your...
Yeah, it was prepared by counsel and submitted on March 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
And actually what happened, so Mr. Lerner prepared it, submitted it on March 2nd. On March 3rd, so I got it that afternoon, I quickly prepared a response, filed it in the morning of March 3rd, 19 minutes later, the court grants the writ of attachment submitted by Mr. Lerner.
At least you consider your opposition.
Excuse me?
At least you consider your opposition for 19 minutes.
Well, assuming that, but at the end of March, we get, after this appeal is filed and the court lost jurisdiction, we get the opposition stamp denied. The court had no jurisdiction over MBI. And that's the bottom line. The order is void, and we ask the court to so hold. Now, obviously, you know, if the decision in the main case, the previous argument, is reversed, it meets everything, but it still needs to, it meets the contempt. But it's still, the court still needs to rule on this writ of attachment because it's been filed in the real estate records and has to be void ab initio to protect my client against any actions in the interim. So that was March 3rd, 2010. We're now at the end of July, 2011. So it's void ab initio, and I think it's atrocious, and I submit it's atrocious that counsel would do something.
Mr. Cohen, let's assume that the court, let's assume that you're correct, and this order has to be vacated, and we determine to remand it for further consideration, perhaps. Do you read Rule 70 as requiring a finding of contempt in order to enter such an order of divesting title?
No.
Okay, so the two are independent. We can do one.
You can do two. Okay. The contempt is independent from the Rule 70.
Let me ask you this. Given the fact that your client did execute that November 9th quitclaim deed, which seemed to be the most that it was ordered to do, why is the contempt even before us? Why don't you argue that it was purged and this whole thing is moot? Why do we care about the contempt anymore, I guess, is what I'm getting.
Actually, we probably don't. The court did not held my client in punitive contempt, did not impose a fine, did not impose imprisonment, but the fact, it just sits wrong in my client's craw that he's in punitive contempt and he's trying to comply with a court order.
But the contempt was purged by virtue of the court entering this divesting order, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, it should.
If it were remedial, I suppose.
If it were remedial.
Yeah, but it wasn't remedial. The court held that it was punitive, and that's the problem. And we would just like it resolved by this court so the record is clear that my client did not violate a court order and was not in contempt of court. I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time.
Thank you, Your Honor. PSF respectfully submits that the trial court's decision to hold the defendants in contempt and issue the writ are proper and strongly supported by the evidence.
Okay, so let me just start off with the question I asked opposing counsel. Was this a punitive or a remedial contempt?
My understanding, Your Honor, is that it was a punitive contempt citation. The four elements of contempt, we think, are squarely met.
Beyond a reasonable doubt.
The first is that it was a lawful order existed.
But do you agree it has to be findings beyond a reasonable doubt?
I believe the court's final orders does make it clear that they found him in contempt.
But I didn't see beyond a reasonable doubt at that level.
I didn't either, Your Honor.
Okay.
The defendants have admitted that a lawful order existed. The second element is that McKenna knew of the order. We believe that he obviously did. He submitted it.
If the order directed MVC to deliver a quitclaim conveying good and sufficient title, how is that a lawful order?
It was a lawful order entered by the court.
I understand it's entered by the court, but how is it lawful if MDC doesn't have title?
Well, that's what I'd like to talk about, if I can. The position that was taken throughout the pleadings, the position taken through trial, and all the way 6 months after the trial by McKenna, was not that MDI owned the lots. They never raised that. That argument only appears 6 months after trial, after the initiation of the contempt proceedings, and after McKenna retained his new counsel. Instead, throughout the trial, they acknowledged that MDC was the owner of those lots. How'd they do it? Well, first in their answer, there was an allegation that at the time of the fraudulent transfer, MDI did not exist. They admitted that. Now, Mr. Cohen would like to have you believe that at that time they said, no, MDI does exist, our corporate existence continues. No, they admitted that it did not exist. And the statutes, CRS 7114105 states, while a dissolved corporation continues its corporate existence, it may not carry on any business except as is appropriate to wind up and liquidate its business and affairs. This is 5 years later. It was dissolved in 2002. We alleged that it was did not exist. They admitted it.
Secondly, counsel, that's a stipulation of law, isn't it?
I would think so.
And that is not binding upon this court or the lower court.
Well, it was evidence in front of the court at the time it made its decision. Secondly, the defendant raises 16 affirmative defenses to the claims, but they don't mention MDI once, and they did not mention that MDI owned the lots. It would have been a great defense. And they said, look, we're MDC, we're McKenna, we don't own the lots. They didn't do that. Third, and this is
so they may have misled you, but did they have an obligation to tell you what you didn't find out?
No, it is proof in front of the court at the time.
I mean, I guess what you're saying is MDC should be a stop now to deny that it doesn't own the lots. That's really what you're saying, right? Because of its conduct. But there was no finding by the court to that effect, was there?
I believe the court, through its order, by ordering MDC to return the lots, dismissed these claims. And well, something's very
important. You sort of have to read the judge's mind to get there, I think.
Probably, but the court did not miss this issue. They argued this issue four different times, that MDI was the owner of the lots, and the court didn't buy it at any times, rejecting it each time.
Counsel, what bothers me is this. Having been old enough to have examined a number of abstracts of title, how would counsel pass good and marketable title by a quitclaim deed from MDC when the record title is in MDI?
Record title was not in MDI. The transfer was made to McKenna Development Inc. MDI was not in existence, Your Honor. They admitted that. MDC was formed 2 weeks later. MDC is who Ed McKenna, the evidence was clear that Ed McKenna considered MDC to own.
Now, what do you mean MDI was not in existence?
It had been dissolved.
You mean administratively?
Administratively dissolved.
It's still in existence under the statute, isn't it?
Yes, it is, Your Honor. But, it may not carry on any business.
Well, fair enough, but it wasn't doing anything when the quitclaim deed was recorded.
I think the court has to decide, what was the reason for the creation of MDC? A reasonable interpretation, I believe, is, and as testified, they wanted to continue the existence of MDI, and they did so.
But there was no transfer of these lots from MDI to MDC, which would have been logical if what you're saying is true, right?
There was no transfer, but there was no continuation of MDI separate and independent from MDC. They blurred the lines themselves, Your Honor. They asserted, in their answer, they asserted third-party claims. MDC did. MDC asserted third-party claims against Mr. Irving. These claims related back to the 1990s, far before MDC's existence. Those claims could only be held by MDI. And we believe that the court relied on that. When McKenna and MDC made those claims that were not theirs, they were claims of MDI, I believe what they did, Your Honor, is they blurred the lines, and they made it very clear that MDC was the continuing entity. Now they want to backtrack.
Also, I can fully understand and appreciate what you're saying. My concern is the title. And I guess I have some trouble finding how a court can order a non-party to do something, or how a party without record title can convey something.
Your Honor, I believe that the answer is clear, is that the court did not buy their argument that MDI was entitled.
But,
because and there's substantial evidence to support that.
But wait just a second. Wouldn't simply a record examination disclose that?
Your Honor, the transfer was made to McKenna Development Inc., not to McKenna Development Company Inc. They immediately formed a new entity and carried on its existence.
In addition, they filed a claim, MDC filed a declaratory claim asking the court to find that the lots belong to them. They didn't ask for the court to find that the lots belong to MDI. They wanted the court to find that they belong to them. Now they want to say MDI, but that's not what their position was during trial. Fifth, a year after the fraudulent transfer, they claimed Ed and Patty, now the individuals, they claimed personal ownership of the lots.
Okay, hang on just a second. Let me understand what remark you made. Are you saying that the quitclaim deed from ESF to the MDI was to the name of a corporation that was different from what MDI was called?
It was, Your Honor.
Okay.
It was to McKenna Development, Inc., not to McKenna Development Company, Inc. Sixth, and perhaps the most telling, is that in 2008, while this case was pending, Ed tried to sell one of the lots to a third party. And did Ed sign that contract to sell on behalf of MDI? No, he didn't. He signed it on behalf of MDC. So if you're looking to determine whether Ed, whether his contempt of court was intentional, you have to consider this. His argument is that he didn't have the ability to transfer the lots because MDC didn't own them. But evidence shows, and I'm going to ask the court to review the signature page of the contract, it's CD page 948. I refer to that page as a smoking gun because it demonstrates the fallacy of their argument here today. That document shows that when Ed decided to sell one of these lots, he didn't claim it was MDI selling. He signed that contract on behalf of MDC. It's in his handwriting.
On behalf of MDC or on behalf of himself?
On behalf of MDC. And it's there at CD page 948. There's never been any refutation to that. So today they want you to believe MDI owns it. He didn't think so. Seventh, under oath, they admitted that MDI and MDC use the same tax number. And I asked him about it, and he says, yeah, we did it for a good reason.
Is it your position that Mr. McKenna was the alter ego?
Of both parties.
Of both parties, both MDI and MDC.
I think the court found that, Your Honor.
Where did it make such findings? That's what I'd like to know, then.
It did not make a determination, but it did make a very strong statement as, aren't you the owner of both? Is there nobody else involved in both?
Did you argue this below that he was basically acting as the alter ego of both corporations?
I don't think I used the terms alter ego, Your Honor, but I did clearly argue that his actions show that he believed MDC was the continuing. And it's not only his actions, it's what happened not before, during, after this transfer.
Counsel, I'm not saying that the evidence here might not well have allowed a finding to that effect, but simply being the sole owner of two corporations does not establish alter ego.
It certainly doesn't, Your Honor.
There has to be
suggesting that it did.
Any number of other findings to justify that. As I say, I'm not suggesting that the evidence here might not well have established that, but there has to be findings to that effect, don't there?
I believe that the court's finding as it related to the contempt show that his refusal to comply was absolutely willful and intentional. Another important fact that the court should consider is that Ed and MDC submitted a proposed trial management order, and that included a stipulated fact. There was twice this was submitted. That stipulated fact said, defendant Edwin McKenna serves as principal of MDC LLC, and its predecessor, McKenna Development Company, an administratively dissolved Colorado corporation. That was a fact that was stipulated by them and then submitted to the jury. They did it twice. Now, the court has ruled that stipulations are a form of judicial admission which are binding on the parties, and they may constitute the basis for judgment. And the court also said that the Tenth Circuit has ruled that a court must give effect to the stipulations of the party. Under the plain definitions of predecessor and successor, MDC succeeded to the rights of MDI. I think it's hard-pressed to understand how they could acknowledge that we have a predecessor and a successor, and then today come in and ask you to find their separate entities.
The stipulation was that MDI was the predecessor to MDC. That's what it said, right?
That's what it says.
It doesn't say that MDC is a successor to MDI, does it?
No.
And there are other elements to show successor liability.
Yes, but the definition of successor is that it is the opposite of a predecessor.
Right, but there are other things to show successor liability.
There could be, Your Honor.
We
believe that there's additional...
Were there any findings by the court below to show that this was based on successor liability then?
Again, Your Honor, the court didn't get a chance to rule on this. This whole argument of MDI never came up.
Well, wait. Between November and January, there was...
It did come up between November and January.
There was a hearing, Mr. Cohen told us.
He had four chances to argue this. He tried as hard as he could.
And you submitted the proposed order that the court entered, and those fine. I mean...
No, Your Honor. The order that is the subject of this contempt citation was submitted by Ed McKenna's counsel.
January?
I asked. The May order.
Well,
the order that he refused to comply with was submitted by his own counsel, and it said MDC has 30 days to return the lawsuit.
Let me explain why Mr. McKenna himself wasn't personally ordered to act in that thing, but apparently it slipped through the cracks somehow. Now, I'm asked about the January order. When the contempt finding was made, that was an order made by the court itself.
It was?
That wasn't submitted by anybody.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
The January 2009 order, or 2010 order, was entered by the court itself. The court just didn't make any findings.
The court did. The court did find that the defendants have refused to turn over the lots, that they refused, that they were ordered to do so, they repeatedly refused to comply.
It actually says the defendant. It's singular. That's the part of the problem here. It doesn't seem to include Mr. McKenna himself, which was Mr. Cohn's.
It's talking about MDC. It's saying the defendant failed to turn over the lots, refused to comply, that the refusal is an intent to interfere with justice, that their action is knowing and willful, and that ESF had met its burden.
Counsel, is this after MDC had submitted a quitclaim deed?
Yes, sir.
But then how can they say that the MDC had not complied with the order?
Your Honor, the judge did not buy the argument that MDI is a separate entity. They just did. And there's a lot of reasons for it.
Well, MDC submitted a quitclaim deed, right?
MDC did. The court found that that was not sufficient because their argument was, hey, MDI is now the owner of the lots.
So the court bought the argument that MDI was the owner?
No, the court did not buy it, but what they said is, in their final order, they said, we don't care who it's in, Ed. This order, this writ of attachment, is going to attach it from whoever's name it happens to be in, because we're not buying the story that MDI is a separate entity. Federal tax returns filed by the parties, and Ed personally confirmed that as well. The 2005 and 2007 returns, one before and one after the creation of MDC, they report income from McKenna Development Company using the same tax ID. I've already stated that very important, I have 10 seconds, Your Honor, is that December 18th is a critical day. That was the date that Ed McKenna had an opportunity to convince the court that MDI was a separate entity and that this was a problem. We were expecting there to see separate tax returns, maybe contracts signed by MDI after 2007. There was no evidence, Your Honor. Ed pled the fifth. He had his chance to avoid this contempt citation. He had a chance to prove that MDI was a separate entity. The overwhelming evidence that was submitted to trial was that there was no separate entity, and for that reason, his refusal to comply was intentional. Thank you.
I'll be brief. The January 20, 2010 order contains no findings. Contains no findings regarding MDI, no findings regarding alter ego, just has conclusory statements, talks about the defendant. This issue about this tax ID, well, the undisputed testimony was of the CPA who prepared the 2007 tax return, Barbara Medina. She testified in December. And she said, I prepared it for the corporation. That's why I used the form 1120. If I prepared it for a limited liability company, it would have been on a 1065. It was not. I prepared it for the corporation which owned the property. There was no alter ego claim. MDI was not a party. In order to have an alter ego claim, it has to be a party. The Judge Richman asked about if MDC is estopped. Well, I don't believe it is, but MDI is not estopped. MDI was not a party. Again, MDI had title. And as Judge Criswell said, any title insurance company, any lawyer looking at title would show it's MDI, a corporation. You look in the Colorado Secretary of State's website, it's a corporation, it's dissolved, but it continues in existence. And there was a misnomer. And that misnomer is irrelevant. The case is cited on in footnote 4 on page 2 of my opening brief, the Sunstone case. It should have been McKenna Development Company, Inc., and it was McKenna Development, Inc. The company was left out. But that's irrelevant in this case. The corporation owned the property. It had the Inc. It wasn't a limited liability company.
Counsel, I see that you are out of time.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel, for your excellent arguments. This case will stand submitted, and a written opinion will issue.